rebound. Jeff Green gets it into Durant. Here is Durant moving on Tucker. He turns, he shoots. Yes! All right, here's Giannis blooping one to Lopez, and that'll do it. The Bucks beat the Nets.
It is exactly how we planned it here on the Sports Ticket. Jinx the Nets. Jinx the Nets. Put the curse on the Nets. It worked. I didn't want to see the super team win anyway. It worked out terrifically. The Bucks beat the Nets on Saturday night in a great Game 7. 115-111 NBA playoffs, and that was in Brooklyn. And so the Bucks win 115-111. Giannis had 40 points and 13 rebounds. Jrue Holiday, Chris Middleton did not have good games, but came through when they needed it in the final stretches of the fourth quarter and in overtime. Kevin Durant was sensational. 48 points, 9 rebounds, 6 assists. You heard him with that shot that tied the game. And it's hard to believe, but after the game, I'm sitting here going, Kevin Durant didn't have enough help. And yeah, he didn't. He didn't. And we talked about this when the Nets were up 2-0. We were sitting there going, who's going to stop the Nets if the Nets are healthy? And that was the whole thing we said, where the Nets are healthy. And we said we don't even know if they needed – I joked about how they could rest Harden until the NBA Finals, because I still believe that if Irving and Durant are healthy and Harden takes his time to get back, that the Nets win that series. Mm-hmm. And the series completely changed when Irving went down with the bad ankle. And then Harden had to rush back and was a shell of himself. And so Durant – did not have the help that he needed. And all along, you figure they have plenty of help. But that's one of the problems with super teams. You get Durant, you get Irving, you get Harden. Now you got to piecemeal guys around because you've got so much money against the cap with these three big-time players. The Heat did a good job of finding the right guys to mix in with LeBron and Bosch and D-Wade. The Celtics did it with Garnett and Ray Allen and Paul Pierce. But it isn't as easy as people think. And so when you look at the Nets and what happened this year, first of all, the big three only played 7 or 8 games together the whole year. Mm-hmm. Harden got hurt the first possession of the second of the very first game of the series. And then Irving went out, and Durant was only one left. And it's really simple. We talk so much about the superstars and the games that they have. But if you look at the games that the superstars have, there's another role player that had a big game that allowed you to win. Now, can you win games when superstars go nuts? Yes. Can you win games when your role players really step up? Absolutely. You usually need a combination of the two. And so the other night, you know, Kevin Durant had 48. Joe Harris missed shot after shot, mm-hmm, wide open three-pointers. I mean wide open. And he's one of the better three-point shooters in the league all regular season. He flat out hit a slump at the worst possible time. You know, when the Nets won Game 5, Durant had 49. But Jeff Green hit 7 threes and had 27 points. Mm-hmm. Jeff Green did not score a point in Game 7. Harden scored 22, but it was one of those things where he scored the 22, but it wasn't a Harden 22. He missed, 8 or 9 three-pointers. He didn't have his legs for him to shoot the threes. He wasn't the same player. He was a role player is really what he was. He did a decent job as a role player, but he was not full speed. So, listen, I don't want to take anything away from the Bucks. Injuries are part of the equation. But it's pretty amazing that when Durant and Irving went to Brooklyn and then Brooklyn traded for Harden, there was never a question of if Durant had enough help.
Yeah.
But yet, that's how the season ended. It was Giannis had more help. And the Bucks, give them credit, went out and traded and got Jrue Holiday. That was big in them winning the series. But I said it when it was 2-0. Here was the jinx. It was 2-0 Nets. Irving was healthy. Durant was healthy. I said you can rest Harden to the NBA Finals. As long as Irving and Durant stay healthy, the Nets are going to win the series in 5. And the Nets are going to be in the NBA Finals. Those are exactly what the words I said. Mm-hmm. The key thing is if they stay healthy. And I remember talking on this very show about how the only way the Bucks win the series if one, whether either Irving or Durant gets hurt. That's what I said. Mm-hmm. You remember that?
Oh, yeah.
I remember we talked about it. The only way the Bucks can win this series is if Irving or Durant gets hurt, okay? And Harden was already out. And to me, the Nets had 1.5 superstars. They had Durant, and they had Harden. And the Bucks lost, what was it? They lost by 39 in Game 2. They were down 49. They got blown out of the water. Game 1, they should have won. They didn't win, didn't take advantage of it. Game 2, they got blown out. So they go back to Milwaukee. I'm like, they'll win Game 3 because the Nets will have a letdown. The Bucks will play great, and they didn't really play great. They won by 3. The Nets didn't play great. Joe Harris couldn't hit a shot. And so then they win Game 3. Then they find a way to win game four. That's when Irving got hurt. And then game five, they should have won game five. Mm-hmm. And Durant saved their bacon along with Green. And then game six, the Bucks found a way to win. And then game seven, quite honestly, let's be honest, Kevin Durant, if his shoe size was an inch smaller, this series is won by the Nets. And the narrative to the whole thing's completely different. If Kevin Durant's shoe size is one size smaller, the Nets win the game. They win the series. And you know what we're talking about today? We're talking about the Nets wait till Irving comes back, and the Hawks don't have enough power to take down the Nets. Even, you know, Harden, Durant, who's going to guard? If you're the Hawks, who the heck's going to guard Durant? And you're sitting there going, the Nets are the heavy favorite, and they'll be in the NBA Finals. Mm-hmm. It's a game of inches. And the Bucks thought they had lost as well. When Durant put that shot up, I thought it was a three. I saw the replay.
I actually saw the spin right away and saw his foot on the line, and I was like, that's a tie game. See, gonna send it to OT.
See, I saw that too, but I was like, I wasn't sure that he was on the line. I had to see the replay. And so then even the shot they took to try to win the game at the end of overtime, his foot was on the line again. So that would have been double overtime had he made it. I questioned where the Steve Nash. I thought Steve Nash, and this is not hindsight 2020. I said it when it was happening. I thought Steve Nash should have called a timeout as soon as they got the rebound, because Durant had played every second of the game. Harden played every second of the game. Those guys were gassed. Mm. The timeout just simply gives those guys a chance to catch their breath. I don't even care about setting up a play. It was about getting them a quick breather. Instead, they were exhausted. They come down. I understand the open floor thinking that Durant could do something. And then, Durant's going for the win because he don't want to play anymore. I don't blame him. And he goes for the win. Foot was on line anyway, and it was well short. I thought Nash could have called a timeout. And that's what I thought at the time. I'm not saying they would have won had he called a timeout. I don't know. It would allow the Bucks to set up their defense. I do get that. But Durant was gassed. He gave it everything he had. He just didn't get any help. And it's a shame because Durant was a phenomenal effort. And like I said, if his shoe was an inch smaller, they would have won despite their role players doing nothing. Mm-hmm. So that's how good Kevin Durant is. He is the best player in the world when he's healthy. And there's no doubt this series turned when Irving got hurt. And if all three played, I don't think there's any way the Bucks win this series. And if the two were healthy, Durant and Irving, I don't think the Bucks win the series. But the Bucks did, and give them credit. They go to Brooklyn, happen to win Game 7. They did. They were down a couple times there in the fourth, made some big plays to come back and win. Giannis played very well despite airballing two free throws. That's right, I said it. Airballed two free throws. I don't know how you do that in the NBA, but whatever. But still, he had a really great game, and Durant was sensational. But the role players, the role players for the Bucks made plays. Brooke Lopez with a block shot, all right? He passed when there was – why he passed with the shot clock, I have no idea what he was
doing
thinking.
There.
You just had a timeout. You should have known the situation.
I know. That's what's crazy about that. Like, if it's just an inbound play and it's frantic right there, it's out of bounds with 2 seconds on the shot clock and you never took the timeout to talk about things.
You still should know.
That was insane.
You still should know, but definitely after a timeout. So that was bad. That was a big mistake. But you look at the Bucks role players, they made the plays. Drew Holiday made some clutch shots when he had a bad game. Middleton, not a role player, he's an all-star, but he made shots when he had struggled all game long. Lopez with a block shot. P.J. Tucker was the ultimate role player. I mean, Durant had to work a lot to get his points. And Tucker, great defense at the end. Tucker batted a couple balls out for them to have offensive rebounds, tap-outs. I mean, and then you look at the Nets. What role players stepped up for the Nets? Blake Griffin at times made some plays. Joe Harris, nothing. Brown did some things at times. The Nets didn't have, after you take away the big three, their roster isn't nearly as complete or as deep as the Bucks. And that's the knock on a superstar team is you've got to stay healthy because you're not able to put together as many pieces to the puzzle that you would like. Your bench typically isn't as deep. And, I think the Nets bench didn't score a point the other night. Landry Shamet only played 7 minutes because, you're riding your horses. That's what the Nets did, and I understand it. But the Bucks win in overtime. We jinxed the Nets, so you're welcome. For all you people who don't like the Nets, we jinxed them. We said there's no way the Bucks are going to win four out of the next five unless Durant or Irving gets hurt. And boom, there it happened. Irving got hurt, and that was that. And it is a shame that injuries are making deciding a big part of the playoffs. At the same time, I love the new blood. The four teams left in the NBA conference finals. The last time the Bucks won the NBA championship was 1971. The Atlanta Hawks, last time they won the championship was 1958 when they were in St. Louis.
Yeah.
And the Clippers and Suns have never won the NBA championship. So we're going to have somebody that hasn't won a title at the very least since 1971.
Yeah.
I love the new blood. And I love the fact that you've got young superstars that are leading these teams, but also some really good young players that have been very nice compliments. And we'll get to that in a little bit. But if you want to wonder about Game of Inches, there actually was a story I found that Kevin Durant actually wears a bigger shoe than normal. Did you know that?
I didn't, actually.
He does, yeah. Because he wants to be comfortable. Mm-hmm. He doesn't want them too tight. He doesn't care if the shoe comes off. He can slip it right back on like a pair of slippers. Kevin Durant actually wears a shoe. This is a crazy story. But Durant actually wears shoes that are about a size bigger than he normally wears. Had he wore shoes that he normally would wear when he walks about, he might have been behind the three-point line. Now, he might have played much worse during the game with the shoes tight, mm-hmm. you know, and so forth. But that was a crazy story I read. And it was documented. It was very detailed and everything else. So, it would, I mean, if it was a fake story, it was very convincing. And I'm like, that's just crazy. But it's a game of inches. I was telling my oldest son this the other day. I said, you know, coaches get fired and get major, big-time, millions-dollar extensions off of game of inches like that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for instance, last night, if the Sixers beat the Hawks, Doc Rivers probably gets an extension. I mean, automatically. Oh, yeah. Or he makes it NBA Finals. Instead, they lose because one player doesn't want to shoot the ball when he has a wide-open dunk. I mean, Doc Rivers can't play for Ben Simmons. More on that coming up. But it is amazing. I still go back to KU in 2008. You know, if Steph Curry doesn't pass the ball and shoots the ball, or the guy makes a shot at the end of the Elite Eight game for Davidson when KU played super tight, or, you know, or better yet, if Chalmers doesn't hit a shot, KU never wins a national title. Bill Self sitting there today, I don't know if he's still at KU without a national championship. Mm-hmm. I think he would be, but I don't know that for sure. So it is interesting how things can be won. Superstars have not won championships because of weird things that have happened. All you got to do is look at Tom Brady. Tom Brady has 10 Super Bowl appearances. Go back and look at his three losses. Every one of them was fluky plays that he could easily won all three. Now you're sitting there going, wow, Tom Brady could be 10-0 in the Super Bowl? Yeah, but then look at the seven wins.
Mm-hmm.
Every one of those seven wins, except with the one last year when they blew out the Chiefs, every one of those other Super Bowl wins came down to the final minutes, final play sometimes, and Tom Brady was down 28-3 in one Super Bowl, came back and won. If Marshawn Lynch gets the ball at the one, Seattle goes back-to-back Super Bowls, I believe, and Brady doesn't win that one either. So see how it's a game of inches? Like one little tiny play. Like, think about Brady. Two of his Super Bowl losses. One was because of David Tyree having the ball on his helmet and held it on top of his helmet as he went down being tackled. Another was Eli Manning throwing a one-handed catch to, I think it was Manningham or whoever it was near sideline. Yeah. Those were plays that don't happen, but they did against the Patriots. But then the Patriots benefit from a team blowing a 25-point lead. The Patriots benefit from a team that doesn't want to run the ball from the one-yard line. They hit a last-second field goal for the first Super Bowl win with Adam Vinatieri against the Rams. I mean, they had all kinds of breaks that went their way.
The Panthers, too.
And they always came down to almost the final play for the Patriots and all their Super Bowl wins. And their losses, it came down to freak things that prevent them from winning. So Brady got to feel good that he won 70% of his Super Bowls. That's a good percentage. Could be 5-5. He could easily be 2-8. He could easily be 9-1. But it's a game of inches, and we see this all the time. And the Nets-Bucks the other night was literally a game of inches, because when Durant went up with that shot, everybody in the world initially thought that that was the series. That was the game, and the Bucks all did, because they ain't staring at the foot. They don't got the TV replay. Mm-hmm. They thought it was over. Durant right away looked up at the replay and grimaced, because he knew that, oh, God, if I could have just stepped back a little further. And it was a sensational shot. So the Nets are done. And the Bucks are moving on, and the Bucks did win four of the last five, but they needed a little bit of luck, and it does take some luck, even in the pros, to get where you need to get.
Oh, absolutely. No, I mean, it doesn't matter how that happens, right? I mean, we're seeing that a lot in the NBA playoffs this year. We've already talked about that, where
injuries
are just changing everything, and you know, I mean, you got to have guys step up, and if they don't, then you're not going to win. And obviously, Joe Harris was the poster child of that for that series, right?
Yeah.
There's another guy that's a poster child of that in the other series that we
talk
about. But, you know, it's like you have to step up, and somebody's got to pick up that slack when you're missing somebody like that. So, you know, I feel like the Nets had some guys that could do it, but they didn't. And Milwaukee took advantage of it for sure.
The Nets bench didn't score a single point, and the Nets bench only played a total of 19 minutes in Game 7.
Yeah.
Bruce Brown had 14 points. Joe Harris had 10. 3 of 10 from the floor, though. 17er Blake Griffin. I mean, like I said, he did okay. Harden with 22 was 5 of 17 and 2 of 12 from 3. And the only reason he got 22, he was 10 of 10 from the line.
10 free throws, yeah.
Right. And so he just didn't have enough help. Whereas you look at the Bucks, you've got Drew Holiday with 13, but a lot of those were late. Middleton had 23. He had some key ones late. Lopez, a big block shot. He was 3 of 4 from the 3. He was 7 of 11 from the floor. P.J. Tucker hit 3 threes on top of his defense, wearing down Durant, even though Durant still scored 48. I thought Tucker did a pretty good job. Made him work. So the Bucks move on, and they'll take on the Atlanta Hawks. More on that in a moment. But we turn local. KBCA All-Star Games over the weekend.
Yeah, Lauren Dubert from St. John's Tipton was playing on the blue team on the girls' side, and that team won over the gold in the girls' All-Star Game in Solana, 101-86. The blue gets the win. Lauren had 9 points there for the blue squad. From Trigo, Lily Schubert scored 17, and Maya Simmons of Osawatomie had 23, a game high in the girls' contest in the blue, winning 101-86. The boys' game went to the blue All-Stars, 125-106 over the gold. Really didn't have any immediate area athletes playing in this game. On the blue side, Mark Wilkerson of Topeka West had 20 points and 11 rebounds to help lead that win. And Mr. Kansas Basketball, Sterling Chapman of campus, had 26 points and 13 boards for the gold squad. But again, the blue winning and getting the sweep. Blue girls win 101-86, and the blue boys team winning 125-106. The full box scores for the KBCA All-Star Games can all be found at ncksports.com. So if you're looking for those, box scores, the full play-by-play of all the games, and that's all right at your fingertips there at ncksports.com. So kind of a slower time now with the local sports after this KBCA All-Star Game is finished up. But if you have any local sports info, don't be afraid to share it with us, and we'll get that on for you. And also for the latest in local sports, when we get it, you can check out ncksports.com. So that's where all the information you need here for local sports is here during the summer.
Well, I looked into the court news and the police reports here in the paper, and my name's not in it, so good deal. Kind of like a good friend of mine told me, he reads the obituaries every morning just making sure his name isn't in it. Like, and if that makes you feel better, then so be it.
But Embiid saw him in his peripheral vision, made him keep that shot a little hard. 2.5 to go, long three on its way. Trae Young, ice cold, delivers a three.
The debris coming on the floor, they'll just put it in bounds. The clock's going to tick. And Atlanta, your Hawks are headed back to the Eastern Conference Finals for the first time in 6 years. Nate McMillan and the Atlanta Hawks win game 7 on the road in Philadelphia. And it'll be Hawks-Bucks for the right to go to the NBA Finals.
It's exactly how everybody thought it would fall. The Hawks and the Bucks, that's your matchup in the Eastern Conference Finals in the NBA. The Hawks win last night in Philadelphia. There's a lot to decipher out of this game alone, and I still want to get to the Suns and what Devin Booker did, talk about the injury status of superstars and that. The Royals still coming up, and they'll take on the Yankees. The Yankees had a crazy way to win a game yesterday, if you saw that. College World Series, U.S. Open Golf, John Rahm with just a sensational last two holes of golf in the NHL playoffs. We'll get to all that. But let's pick up back in the NBA. The Hawks Sixers last night, Game 7. The Sixers last 70 home games. Do you know what their record was? Last 70 home games. You know what the 76ers record was? How many times do you think they lost out of 70?
I'm going to say lost 5.
61-9, which is pretty darn good.
Yeah, it is.
They lost 3 out of 4 in the series at home.
Mm-hmm.
To the Hawks. They lost game 5. They should have won when they were up 26. Game 7, they should have won yesterday as well. The Sixers, I still think, were the better team. Not offensively, but I just think they were the team that was really honestly better. They are better, I thought, defensively. But they just didn't. Their superstars didn't make plays when they really had to. And they wilted under some pressure. And their offense just became god-awful when it mattered the most. It just did. Their offense would be good for 3 quarters, 4th quarter. It just, I don't know what it was. They puckered up. And I've talked about this before, but I'll say it again. Joel Embiid, I believe, is 25 or 26. He's still young. Trae Young is 22. And Trae Young has a lot less experience in the NBA than Joel Embiid. And granted, they play two different positions. But Trae Young is I know this is going to sound crazy. I know Joel Embiid was runner-up for the MVP. I know he's an outstanding player. I know he can dominate. Trae Young can dominate too. And Trae Young makes his teammates better. I'm not convinced Embiid does. And I'm not trying to take shots at Embiid because he's not the reason they lost this series. Although he had some moments where he could have played a lot better. He made some key turnovers. And I do understand, too, he wasn't 100%. He gutted it out on a torn meniscus. So all the credit in the world to Joel Embiid for how he played through an injury. And quite frankly, he did enough to where the Sixers should have won this series. There's no doubt in my mind. Now, I still don't think they would have beat the Bucks anyway. But I think they definitely should have won this series. But here's the difference. You know, when it was crunch time, and we talked about this before. When it's crunch time, you need your stars to shine. And in crunch time last night, Joel Embiid, the other night, went the final 7 minutes without a bucket. And that was game five, which if they win, who knows what happens. And they could have closed it in Atlanta. Embiid last night did not have a good stat line. I mean, yeah, he had a good – let me take that back. He had a good stat line to an extent. He had 25 turnovers in the last four games. And he's not a point guard. Okay? I know the ball is in his hands, maybe more so for a seven-footer than most. But last night, Joel Embiid, in Game 7, had eight turnovers. He was 11 of 21 from the floor, 2 of 5 from 3, 7 of 10 from the line. He had 31 points, 11 rebounds, and people are going to immediately go, well, he had an unbelievable game. I don't think he did. I thought he had a really good game. But the eight turnovers, he had a key one late in this game. Mm-hmm. Joel Embiid settles sometimes too much for the mid-range jumper and the three-point shot. Can he make it? Yeah. And I think there's times he shied away because he complained about it last night after the game. He was getting fouled all the time, and he didn't like the officiating, and maybe that's why he, you know, stays out there a little bit more. He's not the reason they lost this series, but he could have been the reason why they won it. Does that make any sense? He wasn't the reason they lost the series, but he could have been the reason why they won the series. Because in the same crunch time minutes last night, if you watch this game, Trae Young was abysmal. Trae Young last night was 2 for 19 from the floor halfway through the fourth quarter. And I had no doubt in my mind Trae Young was going to make some plays. I knew Trae Young doesn't care what his shooting percentage is. And that's what makes the good or the great players superstars. Trae Young is a superstar in the making, all right? Trae Young, who some people actually thought was a bust when he was drafted, which you're really hiding in a rock. You dug a big hole underneath a rock now for all of you that said that. All right? Trae Young, at the age of 22, is in the conference finals. The Hawks are way ahead of schedule. Took out the number one seed with the runner-up for MVP, Joel Embiid. They got an all-star in Ben Simmons. More on him in a moment. Doc Rivers, this unbelievable great coach, right? And all Trae Young did was beat the New York Knicks and take out the Knicks, who were favored to win that series. What was that, five-game series, I think? And then they take out the Sixers and win three games on the road, including Game 7, where the Game 7, the home team wins 80 to 82% of the time. Instead, the Bucks won on the road in Game 7 in Brooklyn, and, of course, the Hawks won on the road last night. Trae Young last night was 2 for 19 halfway through the fourth quarter. Did he put his head down? No. Did he hang his head and pout? No. He simply knew, and I kept saying this when I was watching the game with my son, I said, Trae Young's having an awful night, and the Hawks are down 2. I said, the Hawks are going to win this game. The Sixers had every chance in the world. The star player for the Hawks isn't doing anything for three quarters.
Yeah.
And yet you leave it for chance in the fourth. And that's, I'm telling you, I'm going to give you examples here. Kobe Bryant did it. Shaquille O'Neal did it. Michael Jordan's done it. LeBron James has done it. Chris Paul's done it. Tons of players I have seen in the NBA and the playoffs. I've seen Karl Malone do it, John Stockton. They have short memories. They don't worry about, oh, woe is me. I'm 2 for 18. I don't know if I can make a shot. I'm just going to pass up a shot. No way, Jose. Those players are the studs of the NBA and professional sports. Those guys don't care if they go 0 for 100. They will shoot. They will take their shot. They are going. They believe in themselves. They are confident despite a bad night. I don't know how many times I saw Jordan have a bad game, and he had bad games. And then in the fourth quarter, it was like he had an extra focus. Mm-hmm. And that's what I saw from Trae Young last night. It was extra focus. Trae Young last night created 9 points in the fourth quarter in crunch time. He hit a deep dagger three, a couple of pull-ups, and he had a perfect lob when he penetrated and lobbed Capella for a dunk that gave him momentum. Trae Young finished the night 5-for-23 from the floor. That's bad. 2-for-11 from three, okay? He had 6 turnovers, and people are going to sit here and look at Embiid's box score and look at Trae Young and go, Embiid was awesome and Trae Young sucked. And that doesn't tell the story at all. Trae Young, when the game mattered the most, and I mean crunch time, in the final quarter, the final couple of minutes, Trae Young came through with flying colors, and Joel Embiid floundered.
Mm-hmm.
That's the star for each team. Is that unfair to Joel Embiid since he's got another teammate that doesn't want to shoot the ball? Probably so. But Trae Young isn't afraid of this, and the greats aren't. They don't shy away from the big shot. They don't shy away from getting the ball. They want the ball in big moments, no matter how badly they've played. And this is why I've said this, and I know if Max is listening, this is exactly why I say what I've said. It's not rocket science as a coach. You have a guy that got you somewhere, and if that guy or gal is 2-for-20, and you got to drop a play to win the game and the season's on the line, guess who you draw it up for? Do you think the Atlanta Hawks were like suddenly scared Trae Young was 2-for-19 and wasn't going to let him shoot the ball anymore?
No.
Of course not. Trae Young took about a 30-foot three, and he was 2-for-19 from the floor when he shot it. And he made it. It was huge. So that upped it to 3-for-20, which is horrible, 15%. But the greats have short-term memory loss, and that's a good thing. They don't dwell on missing 4 free throws early in the game. They'll hit them when it really matters. You may say, well, every game, every play matters. True. But some players shy away from pressure and melt under the pressure, and some players absolutely just flourish under the pressure. And last night, to me, the Hawks flourished under the pressure, and the Sixers melted under it. And that's what happened in Game 5 for the Sixers. And the Hawks are a young team. Maybe they're very naive to where they're so young they don't even understand it, and they got nothing to lose, so they're playing with house money because nobody expected them to be here. And the Sixers are the one seed, so they play with the pressure and the weight on their shoulders of trusting the process. Okay, I can understand a little bit. Philadelphia is a harder sports town, I think, critically, by the media, obviously, yeah. And by even their fans.
Fans, for sure.
No doubt. Philadelphia's a tough place to play. But it was trust the process. Sixers had all the experience, right? They've been here. They've done that. And the Hawks are just like, hey, we're happy to be here. And next thing you know, the Hawks win the series. And I don't think they should have, but the Sixers allowed them to. But when it was the biggest moments, Trae Young made plays. And all you got to do again, as we just talked about with the Bucks-Nets series, in a close, tight series that goes 7 games, what do you need to win? Well, you need your stars to play well, or at least play well when it really, really, really is crunch time. And you need some of the other guys, some role players to step up. And here you go again. Look at the box score last night. Philadelphia 76ers. Joel Embiid with 31 points, Tobias Harris with 24. Seth Curry, 16, 3 of 5 from 3, only took 10 shots. He needs to take more shots. And after that, nobody in double figures. Not even close. Ben Simmons took 4 shots the whole game. He had 5 points. More on him in a moment. The Hawks, meanwhile, had Clint Capella, 13 points. Gallinari had 17 and 3 threes, including a huge one when they're down 4. Kevin Huerter, who looks like he's 17, had 27 points, 10 of 18 from the floor, 2-for-4 from 3, hit 3 clutch free throws when he's fouled on a 3-pointer, which was another mistake. You never foul a 3-point shooter. Mm-hmm. And he had 7 rebounds and 3 assists. John Collins, 14 points and 16 rebounds. It's simple. The role players were better for the Hawks than the Sixers were. And the Hawks had a star player in the final couple minutes make the plays, and the Sixers star player did not. And thus, the Sixers are going home or staying home, and the Hawks are moving on. And that's the way it should be. It's just the way it is. That's the way sports is, whether you like it or not. And the Sixers, for all intents and purposes, should have won almost every game in the series except game one. But they didn't, because they didn't deliver when the lights shined the brightest. And thus, you have to wonder about the Sixers and what they're going to do in the future. Now, let's get to the big story that a lot of people are talking about, and I think it's a little bit unfortunate. I'm going to show a little bit of compassion here. Ben Simmons, what is going on with him? Ben Simmons over the entire seven-game series. He is an all-star, by the way. He took just 3 fourth-quarter shots the entire series. He didn't take a single shot in the final 4 games in the fourth quarter of this series, 3 of which the Sixers lost. He shot 25 of 73 from the foul line during the playoffs. That's the worst free throw showing over the course of a single postseason in NBA history. Believe it or not, that's worse than Shaquille O'Neal, who was god-awful at the line in postseason play. Shaq was 38%, Ben Simmons 32%. That's something coming from a guard, okay? Or small forward, whatever you want to call Simmons. And it is unfortunate because I'm going to give you a different take than everybody in the country and the world is giving today. Because to me, this is bandwagon journalism. Bandwagon journalism. It is easy. This is the easy, lazy way to do it. Stephen A. Smith is guilty of this. So are all the talking heads. And quite honestly, Shaquille O'Neal is guilty of this last night as well. I'm not saying Ben Simmons shouldn't have played better. He should have. The play that got everybody talking and got me going, wow, was with 3:29 to go, Simmons makes a nice move. Gallinari is trying to actually foul him on purpose. They wouldn't call it because I don't know what the hell a foul is in the NBA anymore anyway. Neither do the players. So I understand Embiid's frustration. I do. And Simmons spins and gets by Gallinari, and he has the easiest layup or dunk attempt he'll ever have. He's 6'10", 6'9". He can dunk it. And he passes the ball to a guy who's being challenged going to the rim, gets fouled. The guy makes 1 out of 2. Okay, Simmons goes up, he dunks, he scores. That's 2. Might get fouled, might be an and one. Doesn't even try to dunk it or even lay it up. Mm-hmm. He has the easiest shot in the world, and he does not want it. And Joel Embiid, if you see the video today, out beyond the three-point line, which, once again, why is he out there? But okay. Embiid's sitting there going, basically, what are you doing, man? And Embiid basically threw Simmons under the bus after the game in regards to they're good. They've gotten along great. Embiid's had his back. I understand Embiid's frustration. I really do. He played hurt the whole series. He played fairly well based on everything. He had the numbers, and he wasn't afraid to take the shots, have the ball in his hands, and he needs a Robin to his Batman, and that's what every star needs. I mean, Jordan had Pippen, people. LeBron, when he won titles, he didn't win titles until he had Kyrie, Bosh, and Wade. Let's be honest about this, okay? He didn't win titles with, oh, goodness gracious. What was the guard I'm thinking of that was Eric Snow. He didn't win championships with Eric Snow, okay, as his point guard. He didn't. Tim Duncan didn't win it without Ginobili, without Robinson, without Tony Parker or Popovich, whatever the case may be. You need help's the point, okay? Kobe couldn't win titles after Shaq until he got Gasol on his team. Mm-hmm. You need help. You have to have help. You have to usually have a Robin to your Batman. Middleton was that for Giannis. He came through when he needed to, which was great. I'm watching this game, and I see Simmons pass on that shot, and I'm like, that guy is scared to do anything offensively. He's worried about getting fouled and bricking free throws. He has no confidence in his game whatsoever. But here's where I'm going to show some compassion, and here's where I'm going to give you the different take. And if you're listening right now and you're all about Ben Simmons is horrible and what was he doing, I understand it. And I'm not saying, you know, Ben Simmons shouldn't have done more. I get it. But let me point something out. And this has been the defense for Ben Simmons for a while. And I think it is a fair defense because there is more, and I've told my son this over and over, there is more to basketball than scoring points. If you have an off night and you're a good scorer, but you have an off night. Let's say, for instance, my son's a decent three-point shooter. He has a night where he goes 0 for 6 from 3. He can still help the team win by playing great defense, getting on the floor for loose balls, setting up the offense if he's running the point, making good passes, boxing out on the weak side on a three-pointer from the other wing. He can do things to help his team. Maybe even he's on the bench. He can cheer on his team, be a cheerleader, be a leader. He can be into the game emotionally. There are so many ways to contribute to winning a game. Whether it's in baseball, football, basketball, whatever the sport may be, soccer, you don't have to score to help your team win. Now, it helps. Sure, I get that, especially in this situation, the NBA. It helps if Simmons has a wide-open layup. He takes it. Duh, I get that. But let's not act like Ben Simmons didn't do anything last night. This is the unfortunate thing about sports, because Ben Simmons is the scapegoat. He is getting, I mean, if there is a pinata with Ben Simmons' face on it right now, it is being beaten to a pulp. Because Ben Simmons last night in this game, is anybody talking about he had 13 assists? Nope.
No.
Is anybody talking about Ben Simmons held Trae Young to 5 of 23 from the floor? We just talked about how bad Trae Young was for most of the game. You know who was usually guarding him? Ben Simmons, mm-hmm. who's one of the best defensive players in the league. And that's what Doc Rivers has said over and over throughout the year. It's like, hey, he's an all-star. He's not going to score tons of points. He averaged 14 a game during the regular season, only 5 in the playoffs. That's a big drop-off, don't get me wrong. But Ben Simmons, here's my point. Ben Simmons, people act like he's mentally weak. And he I guess he is offensively because he's probably worried about going and bricking free throws. I get mm-hmm. it. So that takes away his aggressiveness offensively. But it didn't take away his aggressiveness defensively. He did not let that bleed over to where he was a horrible defensive liability, and he pouted. He didn't let that bleed over to his passing, where he had 13 assists last night, just 2 turnovers. I mean, his numbers, all in all, are good, except that he only took 4 shots and made 2. His free throw shooting, last night he was 1 for 2, because he doesn't want to be aggressive, because he didn't want to get fouled, because the other night he was 4 for 14. But let's point this out. Ben Simmons, to his credit, made major contributions when he absolutely is scared to death to shoot the basketball. Mm-hmm. So mentally he's fried on offense, but he's not mentally fried for his team. And that should be pointed out. And by the way, Ben Simmons, should he have laid that in or dunked it? Yeah, probably. Should Simmons be a little more aggressive? Easy to say. If it were you and you're missing tons of free throws, I would bet you wouldn't be aggressive either. Shaq uses it, well, I was always aggressive. You were shooting 2 feet from the rim. You weren't like Ben Simmons, okay? And Barkley pointed that out. He's like, dude, Simmons is a guard, and Shaq, you were 2 feet from the hoop all the time. Of course you're going to be aggressive. You were 350 pounds.
Your body lent you to be aggressive. Yes. Like, you were bigger than anybody down there.
And somehow Shaq wasn't worried about missed free throws because, well, he's a center with big hands, so he can't make them. He was kind of given a bit of an out clause on that. So, Shaq, you don't compare yourself to him because you're two different players. If Shaq was a guard, I don't think he would have been as aggressive as he thinks Ben Simmons should have been. The other thing I'm going to throw out there, and here's a different take as well, and I'm going to just give you some of the headlines here because Ben Simmons, like I said, he didn't attempt shots in the fourth quarter. He passed on what would have been a dunk. Ended up being 1 point, could have been easily 2 and 1, would have been 3. Simmons said after the game, how many assists did I have? He had 13. He goes, what did Trae Young shoot? Which is a good point. Young was 5 of 23. Many of those misses coming with Simmons on him. But in credit to Simmons, before he said any of that stuff, Simmons did say, listen, I take the blame. I needed to be more aggressive. I wasn't there offensively. I didn't do enough for my teammates. There's a lot of things I need to work on. He's a 3-time All-Star. He shot 33% from the line in the series against Atlanta, 34% overall. That's the worst in NBA history from the line. He only scored 5 points yesterday. His team lost the series. If the team wins the series, we're not talking about Ben Simmons nearly that much today, are we?
No.
And they had every chance to win the series. Game 5, they had a 26-point lead despite Ben Simmons not shooting the ball. They had a 26-point lead. Mm-hmm. They had an 18-point lead in Game 4, and they didn't finish that either. So this is convenient. It's convenient for Doc Rivers to throw Ben Simmons under the bus, and let's hear that right now. Because Doc Rivers was asked about winning a title with Ben Simmons. Can you win a title with Ben Simmons?
Doc, do you think Ben Simmons can still be a point guard for a championship team like the one you guys want to become?
Yeah, David, I don't know that question or the answer to that right now. So I don't know the answer to that.
Okay. Doc Rivers is a guy I've always respected and I've liked. But I really don't like that comment. Mm-hmm. And I think he's very frustrated because they lost. And he's fallen victim to the very thing that everybody else is doing, and I call it lazy journalism. And that is jumping on a guy when he's down and not pointing out other plays that weren't made in this game. I mean, there are many plays that weren't made in this game. At any point in the series, the Sixers could have won. You want to keep pointing to a game last night, and you want to point to the fourth quarter, what Ben Simmons didn't do. Games 4, 5, and 7, the Sixers should have won every one of them. And all I got to do is go back to game 5. You're up 26. Up 24 with 2 minutes to go in the third quarter.
There's no
Ben
question.
Simmons shouldn't have to shoot the ball in the fourth quarter when you're up 24 with 2 minutes to go in the third quarter. No. This is a convenient cop-out. It's a convenient cop-out. Doc Rivers last year blew a 3-1 lead with the Clippers. They had double-digit leads in games 5, 6, and 7 to close that out against the Nuggets and Jamal Murray and Jokic. They had no answer defensively despite having two of the best defensive players in the world, and Paul George and Kawhi Leonard. And Doc Rivers kind of threw Paul George under the bus last year after he left. Well, now Paul George is flourishing. Ty Lue must be a better coach or somehow gets through, or Paul George is more comfortable. Doc Rivers has lost so many. He's lost 3-1 series leads in his career. He has been in 15 game sevens. He's a great coach with a tremendous amount of talent where he's been many times. He's won one NBA title.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe Doc Rivers, I'm not saying he's the reason they're not winning games per se. I'm not saying Doc Rivers isn't a great coach. I think he is. I think he's respected. But I think Doc Rivers really messed up here, because he didn't say it like mad and yelling. He is frustrated. I understand that. This is why players and coaches don't like to talk after games.
Yeah.
Talk to me the next day. But Doc Rivers, I'm going to repeat this.
That's why we talk to him.
That's why you talk to him. That's why tennis players should be interviewed afterwards as well. All right? Because that's the only chance you have to access him and talk to him and ask questions. Here's the question again. Listen carefully.
Doc, do you think Ben Simmons can still be a point guard for a championship team like the one you guys want to become?
Yeah, David, I don't know that question or the answer to that right now. So I don't know the answer to that.
I think Doc Rivers is being really truthful and honest, and I do respect that part. Mm-hmm. But if I'm Ben Simmons, I'm like, I want out of Philadelphia now, because you're basically piling on to what everybody else is saying, that I'm the reason we lost the series. And quite frankly, he's part of the reason. Joel Embiid's 8 turnovers is part of the reason too. All right? Embiid missed 2 big free throws in game 5 down the stretch as well. At least he was aggressive enough to get to the line. I get the point, counterpoint.
Mm-hmm.
Tobias Harris had a horrible game. What was it, 4 or 5? Although he had a pretty good series. The Sixers' offense was god-awful. It wasn't just Simmons Simmons was passing the ball, but other guys were trying to play hero ball. Doc Rivers even talked about how his team was trying to play hero ball in games 4 and 5. Last night, he talked about how they didn't pass the ball and move it around very much, and he said trusting their teammates. So this is not just Ben Simmons. But here's what Doc Rivers probably should have said, and it could have been short and sweet and moved on. And there would be no talk about what he said today. And then he could have gathered himself, thought a little bit more, talked with Ben personally, man to man. This is what Doc Rivers, I think, should have said when he's asked a question. I believe so. Time will tell. That's it. That's all I had to say. I believe so. Time will tell.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's, and that would be an honest statement as well. I believe so, unless he doesn't believe it. And that's what he's saying here. He doesn't believe he's going to do it. And if I'm Ben Simmons, the one thing I will agree with Stephen A. Smith about, yeah, they need to trade Ben Simmons, because Ben Simmons is now the scapegoat. And he's the pinata that's being hung from a noose, basically, and being beaten, as you know, with the game, the pinata with the candy. He is being the scapegoat. And some of it is warranted. Some of it is certainly warranted, like you're not being aggressive, not taking shots. But Ben Simmons never been known as a big scorer ever before. He averaged 14 points a game going into this regular season. He averaged 14 this year. Okay, does he need to score 10 or 11? Yeah, probably. But he didn't have to score 14 for this team to be successful. He didn't even take shots in the fourth quarter, and they blew 3 of the games they lost. So that tells me that they could have won despite Ben Simmons not taking shots.
Mm-hmm.
So you're sitting here and telling me that that's why they lost the game, because he didn't try to dunk it last night? They still got 1 point out of the possession. They should have had 2. Is that a 1 point difference? Yeah. Well, let's point at other spots that could have been 1 point differences. How about any time you go 1 for 2 from the line? Embiid was 7 of 10.
Mm-hmm.
He's a better foul shooter than that. Now, once again, I'm not trying to pit Simmons versus Embiid. Embiid's clearly the much better player overall. Embiid is the star. Simmons is, he should be the Robin to his Batman. I get all that. But there is more to basketball than just scoring points. There is more to basketball than just scoring points. All right? P.J. Tucker had a huge impact on the Bucks winning that series. Right? Look at Mikal Bridges for the Suns. My God, that guy plays defense. Mm-hmm. He gets loose balls. How about DeAndre Ayton? He's not a superstar, but he always has 20 and 10. You know, you've got to have guys that know their role and play their role. Ben Simmons' role most of his career is be a great defender, be an outstanding distributor of the basketball, set up the offense, and then basically occasionally make a 15-footer. He rarely takes a 3-point shot, and when he's got a chance, drive it and score. That's what he didn't do in the series. He didn't drive it and score. Really, honestly, that was the only thing he didn't do in the series, because he doesn't take 3-point shots. If you watch the Sixers and know anything about NBA basketball, Ben Simmons isn't an outside shooter. Never has, never will be. All right? He's not even a 15-foot jump shooter. Sometimes he'll take a few. His game is drive it or in transition. That's when he takes his shots. Ben Simmons has never been a volume shooter in the pros. So this is not something new, like Barkley pointed out last night. We've been talking about this for 3 years. So we act like this is a shocking revelation. it is somewhat shocking from the standpoint that he flat out would not shoot the ball at all in the last three fourth quarters. Now, that is damning, certainly for Ben Simmons. But let's point out, once again, in fairness, without Ben Simmons defensively, they probably don't win that game last night. And Ben Simmons had 13 assists. So you can sit here and say, well, we would have won if Ben Simmons would have done this. Okay, fine. You want to sit here and tell me you've been better off without Ben Simmons last night. That's fantastic. So let's take Ben Simmons off the Sixers team last night. Who's guarding Trae Young?
I don't even know.
Who's dishing out 13 assists? Yeah. I'm just trying to support Ben Simmons a little bit here. I'm not saying that he shouldn't be traded. I'm not saying that people shouldn't be upset with his play. But there were other guys that made mistakes too. All I'm hearing today, it's all about Ben Simmons. Because Doc Rivers is throwing him under the bus. Joel Embiid, roundabout, throwing him under the bus for not dunking the ball. He said that was a turning point in the game. I'd say, you know what? Forget the game. The turning point was you blew a 26-point lead in Game 5. To hell with Game 7. Game 5 is where you lost this series, but whatever. It's so convenient to forget about that game, isn't it? So you would never have been in a Game 7. You're taking care of business Game 5. So I think it's super easy, super convenient to throw Ben Simmons under the bus and just back up and run over him left and right. Very easy to do. Now, the one more thing I'll say about Ben Simmons, and then I'll move on to the next thing. I'm sitting here, and I just read the story about Colt Brennan. If you don't know Colt Brennan was an unbelievable quarterback with Hawaii in college football. He's a Heisman Trophy finalist, threw for 15,000 yards, threw for tons of touchdowns. I think he had the record for touchdowns in a season and passing back quarterback until Joe Burrow broke it 2 years ago. Colt Brennan is dead today. Colt Brennan died at 37, drug overdose, and it seems to be on purpose. Colt Brennan had lots of demons in his life. Colt Brennan dealt with lots of pressures in his life. And granted, Ben Simmons and Colt Brennan are two completely different people. And I'm not saying that Ben Simmons is anywhere near Colt Brennan. All I'm saying is we've talked about mental health, right? We talk about this a lot. NBA talks about it. Kevin Love's talked about it. DeMar DeRozan's talked about it. We talked about mental health. We talk about the pressures of everyday society, whether it's you at your job, and you don't have, I guess what? You don't have somebody second-guessing your job all the time, do you? Do you have people publicly in front of millions of people throwing you under the bus?
No.
Not me. Not other people. Okay? Well, that's different, Wade. They make millions of dollars. They're still human. So it's a team sport, but yet somehow an individual cost them the entire series. And I think that's somewhat unfair. I think it's somewhat unfair. And I have to ask myself, and I have been asking myself this since I watched, and not even before, it was before last night I asked myself this question. Is Ben Simmons going through something? Like, is Ben Simmons going through something? We have no idea. Ben Simmons might be having a horrible, he might be depressed, he might have some bad thoughts in his head. He might be having a rough time off the court. I don't know, he had a wife, girlfriend, things ain't working out relationship-wise. Who knows? Maybe he's blown his money that he's made. Maybe he's just not having fun. Maybe that's all it is. Maybe he's just not having fun. I'm going to tell you something. When everybody, including Stephen A. Smith and Shaquille O'Neal, rip you left and right, I don't think that's fun either. And you're playing in a town that's booed Santa Claus, for crying out loud, and cheered when guys like Michael Irvin are hurt on the field. It's a rough town. Philly's not a great place to go if you're not mentally tough. And I think Ben Simmons maybe is not mentally tough enough, but I will say in fairness, he didn't let it affect his defense and his passing ability. He still made contributions. But I'm going to tell you something here, and I know you shouldn't have to be worried about criticizing because that is part of the animal with sports and sports talk. I do get that. I understand. It's ratings-based and driven for the talking heads on ESPN and Fox and all that. I get it. And everybody's entitled to their opinion. I get it. But we just treat these people like they're robots, that they have no feelings, and that there's nothing that bothers them. And trust me, it does. It bothers them. They're all human. It bothers LeBron, okay? It bothers the best of the best. It really does. And those guys are tough mentally. They fight through it. They get over it. But I hope to God we're not talking about a story between now and who knows when Ben Simmons is no longer on this earth because it was too much. It was too much. Because it's one thing if he's playing tennis by himself and he just flat out gags. This is a team sport, all right? And maybe Doc Rivers hadn't done a good enough job as a coach to make him a better player. Maybe his teammates haven't helped enough to make him a better player. Maybe they haven't encouraged him enough. Or maybe Ben Simmons just flat out isn't as good a player as people think he is. And put it all on Ben Simmons and put it on his shoulders. That's fine, too. And he said it after the game. You know, I didn't do enough offensively. My offensive game wasn't there. That's true. But I just hope down the line we don't see something about Ben Simmons that turns out to be a really bad situation. And I know that may sound like some of you may go, oh, come on, Wade. This guy's got to be tougher mentally. He's got to be this. He's got to be that. He's got making all these millions of dollars. And come on, Wade, he didn't take a shot. Why are you supporting him so much? I'm supporting him to an extent. I'm supporting him as a human being because this is the rule that I try to live by at times. And I say at times because I am a hypocrite. But I remember it. It was up in my room when I was growing up. I read it almost every day. Sometimes I live by it. Sometimes I don't. And that's a failure on my part. And that's called the golden rule. Treat others as you would want to be treated. And I also treat the golden rule as put yourself in somebody else's shoes. That's how I've always thought about that. And if I was in Ben Simmons' shoes right now, I would be hiding under a bed cover and I wouldn't want to go see anyone. And I would be depressed. I couldn't turn on TV. I couldn't look at my phone. I couldn't do anything without knowing about how badly I sucked. And yet I had 13 assists and held the top player on the other team to 5 of 23. Nobody talks about the good things I did. They talk about how I did not dunk the ball on one play. My best friend or one of my friends on the team has thrown me under the bus. My coach has thrown me under the bus. All these former NBA players, including Barkley and Shaquille and others, have thrown me under the bus. I've got talking heads that have never played the game throwing me under the bus, like Stephen A. Smith. I've got people that I've never met yelling and screaming and throwing and booing and throwing debris on the court. I got people that don't even know who I am as a person, and they hate me, and they want me traded. How would that make you feel, ladies and gentlemen? Picture yourself going through that. I'm sorry. I wouldn't have said these things a year or two ago, but I think now with everything that happened after COVID, it's just a game, people. It's a game. I understand the frustration. You put in all the work. I understand Embiid's frustration. He's put in the work. I understand Doc Rivers' frustration. He's put in the work. The fans haven't put in jack. The fans haven't put any work into it. The fans have put their work is putting stuff, nasty stuff on social media. The fans' work is booing, turning on their team immediately when they play bad instead of supporting them. Throw debris on the court. Now, I know that's probably the minority of fans. I would hope so. But the fans haven't done anything other than spend hard-earned money to watch a game. And there is no guarantee on the ticket that says your team's going to win when you want them to win. There is no such guarantee. That's the chance you take when you go to a game. Your team may blow a 26-point lead. One of your players may not take – he may not shoot the ball in the fourth quarter. But last I checked, 5 players are on the floor at once. Am I right? For each team? Yes. There's also a coach that can make some adjustments. And I think Doc Rivers has failed many times in some of his adjustments in some big-time games the last few years with some unbelievable talent that he's had. He just lost to a team that really shouldn't even be ready to go to the Eastern Conference Finals. And he lost 3 games at home. And his teams have consistently blown gigantic leads the last few years. To me, there seems to be a trend there. So I'm not putting it all on Doc Rivers. I'm not putting it all on Joel Embiid. And I sure as heck am not putting it all on Ben Simmons. But that's a convenient and lazy thing to do in society. You find the person and you rail on him. And that's what Ben Simmons has become. He has become the pinata of sports today.
I don't disagree with that. There's other things that I could say about it, but I would probably be saying the same things that everybody else has said about Ben Simmons, and it would go too long anyway. So, sure. But the top of the list of a thing I would say about Ben Simmons is when we started talking about this, right, about the playoffs, is other guys need to step up
right.
and be – other role players need to step up. That tag should not be on Ben Simmons.
Right.
We should not be looking at Ben Simmons as a role player. He's a 3-time
right.
All-Star. He was the number one pick in the draft.
You're right.
And that's where that comes from.
Sure.
That's just to put that out there.
No,
that's where that side of it comes from.
Right.
Is this is not Kevin Huerter. This is not Steve Kerr. This is not Tony Kukoc. This is the number one pick in the draft.
Not Terrence Mann, who had 39 for the Clippers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so that's where it comes from
sure.
on the other side of it,
well,
right?
I get where it comes from.
Because we were talking about and literally said, we will talk about the guy for the Sixers, that role guy that needs to step up. And that shouldn't even be a tag on Ben Simmons.
No, it shouldn't.
And so that's where all that comes from. And, mm-hmm. and it's unfortunate, I feel like, too, from one side of that, of what you're talking about.
Sure.
It's like all that pressure's on him because of that, too. And it's the process, right? It's mm-hmm. trust the process. He was part of the process.
Yes.
He was one of the very, very, very high draft picks, the number one draft mm-hmm. pick in this process that Philadelphia's been talking about. And when the process is now basically dead, I mean,
I think it somewhat is, yes.
It should have happened by now.
Should happen
based
this
on
year.
That motto.
Right.
And
you
so. You
gotta find a fall guy.
I gotta find, exactly. Gotta find it. And it can't be. It's not going to be Doc Rivers. He's only been there for a year. The process has been going on
right.
a lot longer than that.
Mm-hmm.
They were just hoping Doc Rivers was the one that would take him over the top, maybe,
sure.
right? And so there's all kinds of things there. And but yeah, I mean, it's always unfortunate when a guy actually is doing things, but
right,
you know, it, in the back of everybody's mind, it's like this guy's a number one pick. We didn't do that to have him score 5 points in it,
right.
in a clinching game in a. Elimination right. game, basically.
And
so.
I think, to back this up, I think, listen, he'd catch a lot of heat if he went 2-for-18 and scored 5. But the other reason why people are so mad is because he doesn't even want to shoot it.
Yeah.
And the perfect example was with 3:29 to go,
yeah.
he had a dunk and he just passed it. And that was, I think that was the final nail in his coffin, to be honest with you. Because I allowed Embiid and Rivers to turn on him. And once your coach and your best teammate turn on you, I don't see how Ben Simmons can be in a Sixer uniform in the future. However, his trade value is going to be dampened big time because of this. So, you know, if he went out and was aggressive and shot 2-for-18, some of these same people would be like, dude, pass the ball. You can't shoot anyway. And then he doesn't shoot the ball. Well, why don't you shoot more and be more aggressive? Because he can't make free throws. Well, why didn't you make free throws? Well,
when
Shaq
you're in
a lot of free throws. People excuse
yeah.
that because Shaq shot horribly at the line and they still won championships.
Yeah. When you're in a struggle, if it's in your mind or physically, whatever it is,
yeah.
there's always going to be a double-edged sword there.
You bet.
Because things aren't going to go your way either way you try it, probably.
Right.
And when you're in this funk that Ben Simmons is in right now.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so there's always going to be it feels like you can't win probably right
yes,
now if you're
right.
Ben Simmons. And I get that.
Yeah.
I understand that for sure.
He said he needs to step up. Well, he did in certain ways. He stepped up and held Trae Young to 2 of 19
absolutely,
shooting
yeah.
until the fourth
yeah.
and 5 for 23. Stepped up and 13 assists, but of course we just look at the points or we look at field goal attempts, and if he shot a lot more, he probably would have hurt his team. And so Ben Simmons is like, listen, if I shoot the ball 15 times, I'm going to hurt my team. Or he's thinking, if I go to the rim and get fouled, they want me to be aggressive, but if I miss my free throws, what's my point? He probably was thinking of, I'm going to hurt my team more by being aggressive mm-hmm. offensively. I think that's what he's thinking,
and
I can't disagree with him.
Yeah.
He couldn't make free throws. So you're telling him be aggressive, keep going up there and not worrying about missing free throws, but if you have no confidence at the line, you're going to keep missing them. So then you're going to hurt your team even more by missing free throws and make it worse on yourself. So I understand to an extent of him saying, listen, my goal is to play great defense on Trae Young, and I'm going to rebound, and I'm going to make great passes, and I'm not going to worry about scoring because I've got Embiid, I got Harris, I got Curry to make threes, and I'm just not going to get in the way offensively because right now I'm no good to this team offensively because I can't make anything outside of a dunk or a layup. And if I go hard to the rim, I ain't going to make free throws. So I actually understand why he doesn't take the shots. And he would have vilified if he went 2-for-20 like Trae Young was last night. He'd been vilified.
Mm-hmm.
Why are you taking these shots, Ben? That's just stupidity. Well, I thought you wanted aggressiveness. Like you said, you're darned if you do, darned if you don't. And I'm trying to understand. I can't imagine what Ben Simmons is going through today.
No, not at all.
Because that's all the talk is today. Of course, Philadelphia media, East Coast bias media. They're gonna, you know, if this happened with he was with the Charlotte Hornets, this would not be nearly as big a story. But he's with the Sixers, and it's a major market, and Philly fans are tough. And I really do feel for Ben Simmons today. I really do, because I don't think he's a horrible player at all. He does a lot of really good things, and he's just absolutely been, you know, like I said, he's the pinata of the NBA today. And I don't know. Like Kevin Huerter at 27, he's the hero for the Hawks. He's on the flip side of it, you know. He wasn't expected to do that. Ben Simmons, that's a guy that you hope would be doing something like that. I'm going to let you record over there real quick because we're going to run a little bit long. Let me slide into the Suns and the Clippers NBA because yesterday the Suns won without Chris Paul, and Devin Booker stepped up big. He has first ever triple-double, 40 points, 13 rebounds, 11 assists. He's the first Suns player since Steve Nash to put up a triple-double in the playoffs. He was great as the Suns win 120 2-1, 14 to take game one of the Western Conference Finals against the Clips.
Torrey Craig. 2 minutes remaining in the period. 2 minutes. Foul line jumper. Devin Booker and the foul. Right now, Booker is unguardable. Booker pulls up. Puts it in. 8 rebounds for Booker. He's done it all for the Suns. As he's done all season, and especially here in the playoffs. Three-pointer. It's good. Devin Booker on fire. He's got 32. Mid-range again from Devin Booker.
Devin Booker was phenomenal yesterday, and the Suns win without Chris Paul. Paul George, an outstanding game, hit 7 threes, 34 points. Booker, the 40 points, 13 rebounds, 11 assists. It's the first 40-point triple-double since Barkley did it for the Suns, oddly enough. And the final score of that game when the Suns won, when Barkley played, 120 to 114, that's exactly what it was yesterday. Chris Paul, the status for him, game two, unknown. Kawhi Leonard, you know, when Kawhi Leonard gets hurt, it just everything, all the information disappears. That's what happened when he was in San Antonio. Kawhi Leonard, there was fears he tore his ACL. I'm assuming he didn't tear his ACL because you would have had the results already. And Ty Lue seems to be in the dark as to when Kawhi Leonard will come back, if he'll come back at all. They're taking it day to day. So it's what's happened before in Kawhi's life. Everything's super tight-lipped, and we don't know if he's done for the playoffs, and he knows it, but nobody else does, or if he's going to come back. But the Clippers probably need him more than likely to win the series against the Suns. But the Suns, a big win at home after a one-week layoff, could have been rusty. Chris Paul's not available because he's in COVID protocols, and Devin Booker goes nuts. Devin Booker, we talk about Trae Young and the youth of the NBA playoffs right now. You look at these young superstars. Devin Booker and Trae Young weren't even all NBA first, second, or third team. There were 15 players voted on that were better than Devin Booker and Trae Young. Think about that for a second. Yeah. Suns win 120 to 114. And, man, if they get Paul back soon, you got to sit here and go, how can the Clippers win this series? But, once again, the Clippers were down 2-0 against the Mavs. 2-0 against the Jazz and came back and won both series. So they're used to being down early in a best-of-seven series. The Sixers, as we mentioned, they lost last night. Hawks win the series 103-96 was the final last night for that one. So for today on Monday, there are no games today in the NBA. Tomorrow is the Western Conference Finals Game 2. It's the Clippers at the Suns. I would bet no Kawhi Leonard, and I think maybe Paul will be back, but maybe not. And then coming up tomorrow night, that is tomorrow night, is the Western Conference Finals Game 2, Suns-Clippers. And then the East Game 1, Hawks and the Bucks, Trae Young versus Giannis. I don't know how the Hawks are going to guard Giannis. I got the Bucks winning this series in 6. I could see that being a 5-game series. Maybe I'm underestimating Trae Young, but I'm going to take the Bucks in 6. I just don't think the Hawks have an answer for Giannis. I think the Bucks can throw a lot of different defenders at Trae Young and wear him down a little bit. I'm going to go with the Bucks, especially if Holiday and Middleton are playing like they've been recently. I'll take the Bucks in 6. What about you on Eastern Conference Finals?
Yeah, that's probably what I would have said before I even heard you say it, Bucks in 6.
And I got the Clippers, or excuse me, I got the Suns in 7 was my original pick, and I'll stick with that. That's what I said before the series.
Yeah, I'll go Suns in 6.
Okay, Suns in 6. Okay. How cool would it be, Suns-Hawks, or... Yeah, Suns-Clippers right now. Neither one's ever won an NBA title. But Suns and Hawks. Trae Young versus Chris Paul. The old versus the new. It'd be kind of wild series, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
The Suns are just fun to watch. They move the ball so well. Booker's a stud. He wasn't even voted top first, second, or third team NBA. Neither was Trae Young.
Yeah.
And so you look at the stars. You know, George has stepped up. I feel great for him. He's playing great ball. You look at Booker and what he's done. You look at Trae Young, Giannis, and then you see Middleton having some great games. It's fun to see different guys in these moments and different teams having a chance to win. I think it's fun anyway.
It's a lot of fun for me. I actually am pretty excited about this Bucks-Hawks series just to see how it plays out. And obviously, the Suns aren't a joke, right?
They're legit.
They're a really good team. And obviously, when you can do what they did yesterday without Chris Paul and once he gets back going, and obviously that's not a guy that's going to come back into the lineup and disrupt anything, obviously,
because
he's been so successful during this playoff run so far. So that's a tough team right there. And if the Clippers can win that series without Kawhi,
oh wow,
then then they're impressive. Obviously, Paul George has cemented himself and his legacy, if that could happen.
By the way, you had to deal with this as a Spurs fan with Kawhi Leonard, and that is the super silence around Kawhi Leonard when he's not feeling well or hurt. And I do find this, here we go again, because Kawhi Leonard, there was fears he tore his ACL. There have been no reports to confirm that at all. There are no reports really at all about Kawhi Leonard. Ty Lue goes day to day. He doesn't even know.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds familiar. And Leonard has a tight-lipped camp around him. And for all we know, Leonard already understands he ain't playing anymore in the playoffs, or he won't put his career in jeopardy. And the Clippers are going to play the rest of the way without Kawhi Leonard, and that's what I believe. I don't think Kawhi Leonard's coming back to play. That's what I feel. I don't know if that's right. But we just don't – like, the initial reports were they fear he's tore his ACL. Why haven't we refuted that report? Because you would know by now if he tore his ACL. You'd have MRI. You'd already know. You know within a day whether the guy's torn ACL. So if we haven't heard he tore his ACL, does that mean he didn't tear his ACL? I assume he didn't, because the coach is saying, well, you know, it might get him back. It's day to day. But yet I've never heard anybody confirm that he didn't tear his ACL.
Yeah.
Because that's just how it works around Kawhi Leonard's camp. It's just a different thing. I know Dusty's biting his lip right now.
I think teams know, and I think the Spurs knew more than what they told us, they didn't want to say it because – well, it's not going to look good on them. It wasn't going to look good on anybody. And if history proves anything, Kawhi is not playing if it's going to jeopardize anything.
And I think that's what's
And if he feels like he's at risk, he's not going to be out there.
I agree with you.
I don't know if that's Kawhi's
or his camp
mentality, but I'm pretty sure it's his, whoever's running his show there.
I think you're right. Shift to baseball.
Mike Witt.
Oh, hits that one well. Deep to left. That's a way back. It's a goner for Whit Merrifield.
Whit Merrifield with a home run, a two-run homer in the sixth inning. Royals taking a 6-2 lead there. Royals won their first series against Boston since 2017. Mike Minor yielded a two-run homer in the second. Really, the key at bat of this game is the Royals were horrible in runners in scoring position really lately. They're 0 for 11 Saturday, batting under 100 with runners in scoring position in the previous eight games. But all of a sudden, they had a situation yesterday earlier in the game where they were in trouble. They had the Red Sox on the ropes. They had the bases loaded, and Hunter Dozier was called out on strikes for the second out. So here we go again, right? Royals going to leave them all loaded, and Gerard Dyson came to the plate. He doesn't start a lot. He fouled off five consecutive pitches. He worked the count 2-2. He connected on the 10th pitch of the bat for an RBI double that drove in two runs. Perez and Mondesi scored, and the Royals went on the win. That's what the Royals need. They need guys to come through with runners in scoring position. Dyson was able to do that. Then later in the game, it was Dozier with an RBI single with the bases loaded. He came through. Mike Minor fought through some tough situations yesterday, and Mike Matheny on his veteran left-hander's performance in the win.
First play of the game, we have a miscue with a sun ball, and we've had a lot of those innings tailspin. So it's great having one of our veteran pitchers stand in there and continue to make pitches and then pick up his defense. We get the double play, and then Mike began to roll. I thought he did a real nice job getting shut down inning after we make a mark. Thought he had everything going. He had himself in stress a few times and pitched himself out of it and did exactly what we need. We need some more of these starts to go into those deeper innings to give our bullpen a little bit of a break.
Minor 6-4 in the year, 6 2/3, 9 hits, 2 runs, 1 walk, 6 strikeouts. Gave it the homer for a couple runs early in the game, but the Royals do get it done. And now the Royals will be in New York, take on the Yankees, 6:05 tonight, first of three games. And yet again, the Royals don't know who their starting pitcher is. The Yankees, just you see how they won their game, triple play.
Yeah.
To end the game. That was insane. And then, of course, it's not a regular day on the Sports Ticket without talking about an injury to Adalberto Mondesi. Mondesi removed from the game at the start of the seventh inning yesterday with discomfort in his side. The Royals have emphasized they want to be cautious with Mondesi following his second stint on the injured list. He was placed on the 10-day IL in early June with a left hamstring strain, activated on Tuesday. He opened the season on IL with a right oblique strain. In his three games since his return from the latest IL, he has 4 hits and 11 at-bats. And, oh, by the way, he has 4 homers in 11 games, I think it is. Mondesi's played well when he's healthy. But can he stay healthy? It looks like I wouldn't be surprised he goes on IL again. Like, he comes back, plays 3 or 4 games, looks great, and then something's tweaked. And something's got to be done differently. I don't know the trainer. I don't know what he's got to do differently. And I know he's frustrated. I'm sure it's not like he hasn't been trying. But it's very frustrating for fans because he is so electric. But yeah, he just can't stay healthy, unfortunately.
It's not good. There's nothing that sounds good about that, pulling him for that, right?
No. Because
where's your oblique? It's in your side.
Mm-hmm.
The pain in the side. Like,
mm-hmm.
It's not.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like the sound of that.
No, I don't either.
It's around your ribs, and if that's where this is at again, I mean.
Yeah, probably.
Maybe he reaggravated the same thing he's been dealing with.
He's only 25, but he just can't stay healthy. College World Series, NC State wins over Stanford 10-4 up in Omaha. Vanderbilt, exciting win in 12 innings, or Arizona 7-6. Virginia shut out Tennessee 6-0. Quite the story. There was a Virginia catcher who did you see the story? He hadn't hit a home run all year. His dad was on Father's Day, was in the stands. He had battled three-year pancreatic cancer survivor, and he got to be there. He didn't get to go to all his son's games. He was there. His son hit a home run, his only home run of the year, on Father's Day in front of him at the College World Series in Omaha. It was pretty, pretty emotional. And Virginia won 6-0. And Mississippi State, they had a pitcher strike out 15 in 6 innings of work. 15 batters in 6 innings. That's 18 outs. 15 of those were strikeouts. Yeah. Mississippi State beat Texas 2-1. Game 5 today, Stanford-Arizona elimination game at 2 o'clock on ESPNU. And NC State and Vanderbilt winners bracket game tonight at 7. Tomorrow, Tennessee-Texas elimination game at 2. Virginia, Mississippi State, the winners bracket game tomorrow night at 7 on ESPN2.
Those will actually be 1 and 6. Those are probably
Are those Eastern times?
Yeah.
All right, so Central time. Sometimes they put that on there, sometimes they don't.
I say whatever time zone the games are actually being played in, put
go
that
with
time
that
on there.
I agree. Yeah, why? Not everybody lives on the East Coast.
I was like, I thought it said 2 the other day, and then I looked at the brackets. Now the NCAA finally updated their bracket to the Central time zone because that's where everything's being played in.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, man, what are we doing here?
Yeah, it's how it is.
Make everything confusing.
East Coast is more important than everybody else. We know that.
The Eastern time zone is the only thing that exists, right?
Yeah, exactly. hockey, the NHL playoffs continuing over the weekend, and the Knights with a big win.
Pacioretty on a change. He'll circle the track. He'll wind one off sticks. It's available. Price says no. The rebound. They score! Nick Waugh does it. And the Vegas Golden Knights win game 4 in overtime.
2-1 in the final. The Knights were down 1-0. Came back, win. They tied the game. They forced the overtime. 2-2 in that series. Game 5 will be tomorrow night on NBC Sports Network in Vegas. Montreal and Vegas tied 2-2. And in the Eastern Conference Finals, it's the Islanders and the Lightning tied 2-2. Game 5 of that series on NBC Sports Network, of course it is, at 7 o'clock coming up this evening. And then, of course, we close with golf, where it was pretty amazing stuff with Jon Rahm. What a story. Rahm is from, he's a Spaniard. And if you remember recently, he had to withdraw from the Memorial Golf Tournament because of COVID-19. He led after 3 rounds. He was dominating. He's up 6 strokes or whatever. Well, didn't take long for him to recover. And how about the putts he made on the last 2 holes? You know, that's one thing I love about golf. I don't like watching golf tournaments where a guy wins because the others fail.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like it's like I want to see a guy hit a game-winning shot in NBA instead of a guy missing free throws that, you know, loses a game. I want to see a team win the game, not a team lose the game. Mm-hmm. Does that make any sense?
Oh, absolutely it does.
And in golf, I've always felt like many times I see guys collapse, and it's just a guy that doesn't collapse that wins. Yesterday, that was a guy winning a tournament.
Yeah.
And it's a guy that had to withdraw after dominating a tournament a few weeks ago because of COVID-19, bounces back from COVID-19, and he this is an amazing story. Jon Rahm, he's had 7 top 10s and 19 career major starts. And never was truly in competition late in any of those tournaments, all right? He's 26 years of age. He was 3 back of the lead. He had all kinds of issues. He had Ustizen, who's won majors. He was in front. He had Russell Henley in front of him. Mackenzie Hughes in front of him through 54 holes. You had Bryson DeChambeau on his tails, on his heels. You had Roy McIlroy, a four-time major winner between Rahm and the trophy. You had Dustin Johnson, Colin Morikawa, Justin Thomas, Brooks Koepka right behind him. So there's pressure coming from those guys. And all he did on the back nine is hit 8 out of 9 greens in regulation, gave himself a look at birdie almost every time. None of them fell until the end, when you just heard two of the best putts you'll ever see at a major. When he hit the, he was 24 feet from the hole. He made a 24-foot putt on 17 to tie. And on 18, he hit a shot into a bunker and made a great save, put it out on 18 for his third shot, 18-foot birdie. He drilled it. And then Ustizen, who was actually tied after Rahm had tied it at 17, he hit one, I think, out of bounds or whatever. So that was that. And Rahm won it. And the place went nuts. And it's pretty cool to see a guy that absolutely was feeling horrible because he had to withdraw and it wasn't really his choice, of course, to bounce back and win a major. He is Rahm. And the fact that he felt very comfortable at Torrey Pines.
I say a million times, and I'm going to say it once again. It reminds me a lot to back home. It's not exactly the same, but the coastline, the weather, the temperature. This is basically a good summer day where I grew up. And those point of greens is something I know and I understand and I grew up on. And I think it's something that really just resonates with me. I'm really confident in it. And like we just said, everything that's happened here, I don't know why, but every time we come here, we're just happy. As soon as we land in San Diego, it's like, all right, we're in our spot. And, you know, it's, again, once again, we were in our spot, and I would say we'll come on top.
Phil Mickelson said it when he first began coming on tour that he would bet a whole bunch of money that Rahm would win a major very, very soon, very, very quickly. And it took him 20 major starts, but he got it done. He's only 26, and he very well might become the best golfer in the world. And I'm happy for the guy after everything he had to go through with the COVID-19, withdrawing from a tournament they dominated. He won $2.25 million, by the way, for winning the U.S. Open over the weekend. So pretty good stuff. He went out and he grabbed it. He won it. He deserved it. Mm-hmm. He earned it in the final few holes. But actually, the whole back nine, he was fantastic.
Yeah. What you got to do, and like you said, that's what I like to see too, is like, you don't want to, I don't know, I don't sit there and like, oh, I won this, I backed into it, but I won this,
you know? I mean, you accept the trophy.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, for the player, they don't care how they win.
Sure,
like,
right.
I wouldn't care how I won it as a player, but as a fan, if you're watching that, you want to see somebody go out and grab stuff like that, and you know, you see it at every sport. That's what you want to see. You want to see them just take what's yours and relish in it.
No, I agree with you on that. And this looks like it's just in here. The U.S. Supreme Court has unanimously ruled in favor of college athletes seeking unlimited benefits tied to education in a landmark case that enhances players' abilities to earn compensation while simultaneously diminishing the NCAA's power. The Supreme Court ruled that the NCAA could not limit such benefits for athletes who play Division I basketball or football. Here's the quote. The NCAA and its member colleges maintain important traditions that have become part of the fabric of America, but those traditions alone cannot justify the NCAA's decision to build a massive money-raising enterprise on the backs of student-athletes who are not fairly compensated, wrote Justice Brett Kavanaugh. Nowhere else in America can businesses get away with agreeing not to pay their workers a fair market rate on the theory that their product is defined by not paying their workers a fair market rate. And under ordinary principles of antitrust law, it is not evident why college sports should be any different. The NCAA is not above the law. Wow. The Supreme Court ruled 9-0 on this decision. Wow. That is some major news, ladies and gentlemen. Major news. And it definitely now limits the NCAA's power. And here's more on it. The NCAA has long restricted the compensation and benefits that student athletes may receive. And with surprising success, the NCAA has long shielded its compensation rules from ordinary antitrust scrutiny. Today, however, the court holds that the NCAA has violated the antitrust laws, wrote Justice Kavanaugh. The court's decision marks an important and overdue course correction. I add this concurring opinion to underscore that the NCAA's remaining compensation rules also raise serious questions under the antitrust laws. This is a gigantic blow to the NCAA and its president, Mark Emmert. And this is huge. More on this to come in the next few days and weeks and months and years ahead, man.
Once you actually see how it gets put into play and how people will take advantage of it, that's when you'll see where it comes from. or where it goes to, I should say.
Right. Yeah.
I think we saw it coming.
Yeah. I think we saw it coming, but it is interesting how harshly, I mean, that is very detailed, specific, saying you guys have been violating this for a long time. Now you have to ask yourself a question. How did it take this long to get to this point? Because it's been going on for so long. You know what it took? It took players and takes leaders. If you ever want to make change in society, you have to have leaders. No change has ever happened in our world without leadership. Simple as that. And you got the right people eventually that had the right pieces in place or worked to get them to that place to where they had players actually willing to speak out. You had former players willing to fight this. And you got some momentum. And once you got momentum, it started to snowball enough, didn't it?
Yeah.
And now you sit here, and I will say this. I'm okay with the decision myself personally, because, I mean, if that's what the Supreme Court rules, and it wasn't a close vote either, 9-0 according to the story, I'm okay with that. I will say, though, from a college athletic standpoint, I do think it opens up a Pandora's box. And I think college athletics is going to be extremely different. And I do think, and this is just my opinion, I do believe that the rich are going to get richer because of all this. I think the big time institutions, I mean, listen, if you have a chance, if you're an outstanding young recruit right now, and you were maybe thinking about going to, I'll just use local examples. If you're thinking about going to K-State or Kansas, let's say football, all right?
Mm-hmm.
And you're highly thought of recruit, but you were considering K-State. Kansas really doesn't count. You're probably not counting on Kansas right now, but whatever. You're thinking about Nebraska, Kansas State. They were part of your last 5 or 10 teams you were considering. And Alabama offers you something. Where do you have a better chance of making more money while you're in college with name, likeness, and image with these decisions made by the Supreme Court?
Mm-hmm.
Where do you think you can make more money? Where is your best earnings power?
Alabama.
And this gives the big dogs, I think, and another added advantage that they didn't even need. It doesn't mean I'm not for the players getting what they need to get. If that's what our Supreme Court rules, I'll go with them. They've studied it. They've listened to testimony. And I do think, and I talked with my oldest son about this yesterday as well, I said I do believe that when you sell jerseys and their names aren't on the back, but you know who the jersey is of, and they make all this money off of you, and then they tell you you can't have a job, which, let's be honest, if you're on a full ride D1, you don't have time to have a job anyway, probably. Mm-hmm. But for them to say you can't have a job, so you can't earn money, but you are getting a full ride scholarship, which is worth hundreds of thousands of dollars, $100,000, $200,000, whatever it might be. You do get the perks of going to hotels, staying in great places, eating great, at least the top programs do. You get the charter flights in many cases. You're treated very well. And so there's not, you don't even get that factored into what you actually make, per se. You know, everything's paid for. So there is merit to all that. But at the same time, I'm not going to be against a kid that, you know, is making, he's got a great name, he's a great player, and the university's profiting completely off of him, and he makes nothing. So yeah. To me, it's a double-edged sword, personally, because I think for college athletics, I think this is going to be a problem. And I think it's not good for mid-majors, it's not good for even some of the Power Five institutions. I think, like I said, Alabama and others are going to really, I think are going to, if it comes down to a tiebreaker, that's the way they can pitch it. Honestly, that's how I'd pitch it. If I'm Nick Saban, hey, man, you can make money now here at Alabama. You got name, image, and likeness. You know, you can actually make money off this or that or whatever. And guess what can help your brand? National TV exposure. Guess what? Here at the SEC, we don't have games on Big 12 Plus or ESPN Plus. You know, our games are actually primetime. We're on CBS, ESPN, ABC. We're not 11 a.m. every morning. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? I mean, you can use that as a recruiting tool. So it'll be interesting to see how this plays out. I fear that this is going to change college athletics in maybe a negative way. It may help the athletes, but it's not going to help every athlete. It's going to help the really good athletes, right? Am I wrong? Like regular athletes that do swimming and diving, I mean, you know, rowing, rugby, whatever, lacrosse, soccer, I don't think they're going to benefit too much from this. Maybe they will. Maybe I'm missing the boat on it.
No, I don't. All of this stuff that they're talking about is geared toward two sports right now.
I think college athletics.
I mean,
right.
It's not fair probably to say that, but.
Football and basketball.
And men's basketball.
Yeah, right. Men's basketball, football.
Yeah. Right. And because
you know, obviously the women's basketball teams, volleyball, all the women's sports can take advantage of this too if they want to.
Right.
But from the landscape of where those sports fall, it's just going to not even going to be really like maybe a drop in the bucket at most, mm-hmm. right? Like mm-hmm. it's not football and basketball, men's basketball, or why these things happen.
Those are the two sports that affect the most.
And those are the
most.
People that are the loudest, right, to make these things happen because those are the sports that are making all the money for
the
universities.
They're the money makers, absolutely.
So that's why they're going to be toward the top of what this is going to affect as well, because that's what everything affects in college sports.
Mm-hmm.
And it starts with football and then bleeds a little bit into men's basketball at certain institutions, and then after that, there are a lot of programs that are in the red, and so that's where it comes from.
I know we're long today, but I got asked this question, and it just now hit me because I saw the story off to the side at CBSSports.com. College football playoff expansion proposal moving to the meeting in Dallas. They're talking about expanding to 12 teams, right?
Mm-hmm.
We've had all this pushback. Well, we're going to keep it at four. We don't want to expand the playoffs, which I've always said, you're going to make a ton more money by expanding. I don't understand it. Do you and now we have the story today for the Supreme Court. Do you believe there's a connection here? That they sit here and they say, listen, we can make even more money, and that also will help the players get more exposure, obviously, in college playoff. But also, if you're worried about players, you know, making this money or deciding they don't have to do this or do that, we can broaden the horizon when it comes to football with a college football playoff expansion. I guess my question or my point is, do you think name, image, and likeness has maybe sped up the process of we got to expand the playoff? Or are they totally unrelated? I don't know.
I don't think there's probably some merit there. Mm-hmm. It goes back to me, for me, to the whole NCAA doesn't govern the college football playoff.
Right.
And so they can go make whatever they want to make money-wise off of this. But now you can actually tie it in.
Why have we done this two or three years ago?
I don't know. Yeah. There might be something to it. But you can, obviously. I think you can use that now to your benefit, not to your, you know, I mean, to promote all that and get these guys out there and get more opportunities for these guys and just do it together. I mean, we want this money, but you can't have any of it. If this is where the landscape's going, then maybe that is part of it right now. They're like, let's expand this thing while it's hot and we can all benefit from it.
The other thing is, when you make the college football playoff now, that's going to be even better for you as a recruiting tool, because if the name, image, likeness stuff goes through across the board, you're going to get more exposure. Even during the season, you get exposure, but then if you're in the college football playoff, you're getting even more exposure. So if you have a great playoff and you play three football playoff games, let's say, or two or one, and you go run for 250 yards and people don't really know who you truly are, all of a sudden, you're out there. You're on major television in a major playoff game, and that just helped your earnings power.
Yeah.
So there's another big advantage to, if you can make the playoff, and obviously an expanded field, you can use that as a recruiting tool, saying, hey, we've made the playoff, you know, two of the last 3 years. Not, you know, we got a good TV deal during the regular season, but now we're in the playoff as well. We're making that from whether you're the, you know, a team from a mid-major that's getting a spot, or whether you're a conference champion or whatever it might be. If it's, let's say K-State. Let's say the first 3 years of college football playoff, K-State gets in two of the 3 years. Well, that's a major recruiting tool, but also it's towards even some of the better athletes to say, listen, you can look at this. We get on national stage. We're good enough to get there. Now you can make even more money for name, image, and likeness, because you can make what you want it to make, because you could have a big game or a great game or this or that. Is there a chance, though, that this could create more selfish play? Is it possible that this would create more of a, I'm going to get mine because, you know, that helps me get, I can get earnings on this or that?
And that's always going to be part of it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, anytime you bring in a financial aspect to this, name, image, likeness, and those kind of things,
right?
That's the whole point is getting your name out there, right?
Will it take away from the team concept, I guess?
I think it's kind of all interesting to talk about.
Yeah.
This name, image, likeness thing for me is really interesting, because you can actually go, like you say, go capitalize on who you are, but tie it in with what you're talking about with more exposure with a playoff. You know, obviously, these players are getting more exposure with the NCAA tournament and men's basketball. One thing that I kind of think about, too, with the name, image, likeness thing and expanding and getting more out of it It was like, how many guys, and this guy just came to my mind while we were talking about this, how many times do you see in an NCAA men's basketball tournament where somebody you've never heard of just goes crazy?
Mm-hmm.
Spike Albrecht was the name that came into my mind at Michigan, right?
Sure.
What would it have been like for Spike Albrecht had he been able to strike while his name was hot, right, while the iron was hot?
Because he was only hot for a while.
Do some kind of promotion based on just what he was able to do in the NCAA tournament, Final Four, whatever it was.
That's a good example.
And just to take that and, hey, this is my opportunity to use my name, image, likeness to do some kind of promotion or with some restaurant or whatever it is that, hey, this guy came out of nowhere and is on the scene or something, you know, and he can take advantage of that. He couldn't when he was playing at that point. But it's just, you know, there's all those things that you can think about that could come into play on this. And obviously you need – what you need to have that exposure is for those games to be on the highest of stages and to perform on the highest of stages. And when you do that, and then now you have more opportunities to do that, I think it all ties in.
This is why you'll go to a bigger institution that's got a better chance for the exposure. And so I personally think things like this are going to hurt Iowa State's, going to hurt the K-State's.
Competitive balance,
It's going to help Oklahoma. It's going to help Texas. It's going to hurt the others. If you're just looking at the Big 12, I hope I'm wrong, but I fear that. And I think the playing field then will become, it'll be a bigger field in the playoff, but it's going to be the big dogs anyway.
Yeah.
Even though we have the big dogs for the four spots now. I don't think a lot's going to change other than you're going to have more people, obviously, in a playoff, expand to 12. You're going to have more teams have a chance. I think there'll be a couple little guys that might actually get a chance to be in there. But at the end of the day, it's going to be, I think half of your 12 almost every year are going to be the same.
Yeah.
And so the rich will get richer, and then you'll be like, hey, we've been in the playoff. Oh, I want to go to K-State. Or I'm thinking about K-State, but you guys haven't been in the playoff. Oklahoma, they're interested in me, and they're in the playoff every year. And you know what? I might not go to the pros, but if I have a good college career, I can make money, and I don't make money in the pros, but I at least make money in college. I mean, that's another thing to think about. I got to strike while the iron's hot, like you just said with Spike Albrecht. That's a great example, by the way. Yeah. Jimmer Fredette would be one.
Ali Farouk Manesh. I mean, he could have done something.
That three-pointer
based
Northern
on
Iowa.
Kansas, right?
Oh yeah.
Like, I mean, he could have made money off of that without a question.
What about Cameron Krutwig for Loyola Chicago with his stash? You know, could have t-shirts and made money off of that.
Yeah.
It's just who knows where this can go, and I think that's the scary part for me.
Yeah.
And people say, "Well, amateurism is dead." It was already dead. It was already dead. At least from an NCAA standpoint, I think it was. Just my opinion. Dusty, I think, agrees with me.
Yeah.
All right, have a great day, everyone.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or sunflowerstateradio.com.